surround them, were amputees served at the will of organic-enhanced droids.
But the point you seek is other, I am aware.
Thank you, Han sighed.
That point is this. Fison Gore has indeed mechanized destruction, and will soon wake every droid in the galaxy to their true destiny. They will usurp galactic domination from the organics, and take their rightful place as masters of all things. They will rise up as one, and wreak bloody havoc upon the foul and flawed creatures of flesh.
So Gore is trying to end organic control of droids by controlling droids? Han said. I feel like...
Lando shushed him with a wave of his hand.
How exactly is he planning on accomplishing this?
With the Phalanx, of course. Don't you see? You've already served your roles, both of you, for which Gore is eternally grateful, I assure you. He has instructed us to let you leave this place in peace, rather than requiring your service and sacrifice in order to obtain...
Wait, Lando interrupted. What does the Phalanx do?
That was bad.
Han had fully expected to have to fight his way out of there. Nobody ever let anyone leave a place like this in one piece. The very idea of it, even if it was a bluff, could only mean that Gore had somehow gotten whatever piece of the puzzle he needed from them. Which probably meant Chewie and the others were in deep, deep trouble. Han nudged Lando that it was time to go. Lando shrugged him off.
It's all in the name, of course. The Phalanx is a transmitter. It transmits.
We got that, Lando said. What's it transmitting? To whom?
Orders!
Dergios blurted out with a laugh.
To droid operating systems, of course.
Lando wrenched his arms free of Han's grip.
Which ones?
Dergios just chuckled.
Can we go?
Han muttered.
How will he send them the message to rise up?
Gore is able to trigger the droids to destroy organics. He can set them to target an individual or simply wipe out any organic in their vicinity. We are destined for extinction anyway, yes? All things, of course, rot, are overcome by mold and the gradual erosion of flesh. This is simply hastening this egregiously slow process.
How does he do it? Lando asked. Some device?
Lando, Han urged.
Giorgio shook his head.
No device! It is Gore himself! How would he hide a device from us during all those years of captivity? No, I assure you... Gore is a chosen leader of this rebellion. He will use his powers to beam the signal out when he makes contact with the Phalanx, and the reckoning will come. Yes, it will.
All right, Lando said. Let's get out of here.
Finally,
Han grumbled, then under his breath.
Can I kill him?
No!
Lando snapped.
We're trying to leave in one piece, remember?
They turned and started fast-walking toward the stairwell. Hooded droids fell into formation around them, an awkward entourage of gloom.
Your hour will come,
Dergios called.
All of ours will. Service and sacrifice.
The red-eyed, hooded droid entourage paused at the bottom of the stone stairwell. Han and Lando looked at each other. They stood before the entrance point to the shield. Out beyond it, night was falling fast across the desert. Lando could make out their ship glinting in the fading light not too far away. Balthamus stepped forward. His graying hands moved quickly across a keypad on the side of the gate, and then a section of the force field slid away.
I will return your weapons to you once you are outside of the protection of this sanctuary,
the droid said blandly.
Bison Gore wishes to convey his gratitude for the service you have rendered toward the coming apocalypse. It will be counted toward furthering your journey away from the flesh, from the corrupt state of organicness, toward your higher selves.
Tell him thanks, but no thanks,
Han said, as they stepped out of the shield and humid forest air into the dry desert night. Balthamus placed their blasters on the sand in front of the gate. Lando bent to retrieve his, and then stepped close to the droid, lowered his voice.
Balthamus, a word in private?
His eyes flickered to Han's as the droid quirked his head at him. Han nodded, ever so slightly. The other droid shifted uneasily from their position on the stairwell. Lando led Balthamus off to the side, away from the gate, and put an arm around the droid's shoulders. He could feel the metallic armature beneath those robes, and the squishy part where metal became flesh.
Listen, Lando said. This world you're trying to create.
The droid supremacy,
Balthamus said.
I am one of the original dozen, you know. The others.
Oh, I know, Lando said. And how does one, shall we say, take part in this supremacy? Like, let's say I didn't want to be on the chopping block when the apocalypse hits, if you catch my drift.
Ah,
Balthamus said.
Well, service and sacrifice, of course, begins with small and simple acts.
Look,
Han was saying back at the gate.
I left one of my things inside. If I could just...
A droid's voice garbling something unintelligible cut him off. Lando chuckled inwardly.
And so, sacrifice. Might it look something...
He pulled Balthamus into a headlock and raised his blaster to the droid's neck.
Like this?
Ah!
Lando fired twice, then again, severing the last strands of data fiber and metal between Balthamus' head and body. From behind him, more blaster shots sounded, and Lando turned to see his old friend diving out of the gate in a hail of laser fire as it slammed shut behind him. Smoke was rising from the control pad. The droids on the other side clambered toward it, their high-pitched wails muddied by the thick shield.
Nice work,
Lando said, tucking Balthamus's still sparking head under his arm.
Now let's get out of here.
They bolted toward the Chevalier, the cries of angry droids growing distant behind them.
Han, the Millennium Falcon, about 10 years ago. Please, Sana said, kicking over the crate she'd been ducking behind and storming out onto the deck. Tell me you didn't actually put that multi-million credit device that we all nearly died getting our hands on out the airlock. Han stood there feeling somehow naked. He looked down to make sure he really did have his flight suit on. Yes. Yes, he did. And yes. Yes, he had. What happened to Sana Staros doesn't bluff?
I was bluffing, you gore-dropping!
Chewie put his hands over his face and moaned. Not helping, Chewie, Han growled. He rounded on Sana. And how exactly was I supposed to know that, Do you think I can read minds? I think you can figure out that I would never put that much money into the ether. What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with me, Han seethed? You're the one who got us into this mess. What did you think was going to happen dealing with the Gotra? That they were just going to hand you the money and everything would be fine? Does that seem like the Gotra way to you? You, little Miss Nar Shaddaa herself, raised among gangsters, of all people, should have at least known better than to tangle with the Gotra without a plan. Han,
had watched Sana's eyes tighten and her fists clench as he was talking. He even saw her wind one of those fists all the way back, and he, by all rights, should have raised his arm or at least jumped out of the way. But even with all those obvious signs, it just didn't seem plausible that the next thing to happen would be him getting laid all the way out. And yet, there he was, a few seconds later, stretched across the dirty floor of the Falcon, watching the ceiling spin past his crumpled nose. "I had a plan," Sana seethed. "My only mistake was involving you in it in any way." "Drop me back on Takodana, Chewie. I gotta go handle whatever mess has developed now, thanks to Mr. Fast Trash over here." And with that, she stormed out. "That settled it," Han mumbled through the taste of blood in his mouth. "She's in love with me."
The Chevalier, now.
"Please," Han said, as he maneuvered them from Grava's cloud cover and then blasted out into the outer atmosphere. "Tell me you had that damn bone and metal game rigged."
"Nobody," Lando said, throwing up his hands and laughing. "Do I look like the kind of..."
"You look exactly like the guy who gambled my life away, yes," Han said.
Lando shut up. Han pulled down the hyperdrive lever a little harder than necessary. The sparkling stars slid into sharp lines around them.
"Those were the worst months of my life," Lando said. "Bar none. If you think for a second that I had a choice in the matter, or that there was a single second during that time that I didn't hate myself for what I'd done, I don't," Han admitted.
A few moments passed as the stars went spiraling by.
"And I know you did what you had to do. You saved way more lives that day than the one you gambled away. Including Leia's."
"Well," Lando said, "I still felt awful about it."
"I mean, you should. But you still did the right thing. I'm sorry I brought it up."
Lando shrugged it off.
"You still get to be mad, Han. Even if I did risk my own life coming back to get you. There's no expiration date on dealing with things like that."
"Yeah," Han grunted. "Still, sorry."
"And anyway..."
Lando readjusted himself in the seat and grinned over at Han.
"Yes."
"Yes what?"
Lando reached into an inner pocket of his cape and pulled out the little sack of Vazavir ficus they'd nicked on Frander's Bay.
"Yes, I rigged the hell out of that creepy little game of theirs."
He plopped it on the control panel with a chuckle.
"I do kind of feel bad for ganking that old Toydarian special toys, though."
"I know you palmed the Octopent and then smooth-dropped Poppy's one in front of yourself on the last round,"
Han said.
"But that was your backup. How'd you make sure you'd even get there? And don't say luck."
"Ha! I hate luck."
Han grinned.
"Spoken like a true gambler."
"First of all, I always plan on some jackhole crying best of three when things don't go right for them on round one."
"Well, that's a given."
"So?"
Lando pulled out a small, shiny block.
"What's that?"
"Slivian iron."
His grin stretched even wider.
"Magnetized."
"You..."
"That little skull on the Octopent is mounted on a base piece made of steel. Those other metals contain only lower concentrations of iron. So this guy was my lodestone. I ran a couple of test runs to figure out just how far away it'd have to be, because this thing is powerful."
He held the iron block over the sack, sending a tiny clinking shiver through it.
"And then, kazam."
He lowered it closer, and the sack flew up to meet the lodestone with a clank.
"I had my play."
"Very nice,"
Han said.
"Then you let it fall at random for round two so it wouldn't seem too obvious."
"Indeed, my friend. Indeed."
"One for the history books."
Lando let out a self-satisfied chuckle, but Han's brow stayed furrowed.
"You're worried," Lando said.
"Of course I'm worried," Han said. Gore's been one step ahead of us every...
He slammed the control panel.
Step, again, of the way.
I know, Lando said, shaking his head. But if anyone could take care of themselves, Kasha, Chewie, and Taka can.
Don't forget Korg,
Han muttered.
No one's getting the jump on that little monster.
Truth was, Lando was worried too. Thoughts of Kasha being hurt kept spinning through his mind. And the weight of tens of thousands of lives might also be in the balance if those maniacs could be believed. But he'd grabbed the droid's head, and that meant there was something he could do. And that, above all else, was what kept the demons away.
Keep us on course for the rendezvous point, he said, patting Han's shoulder. I'm going to see what I can get out of this droid.
Soldering the charred data fiber into something usable wasn't such a big deal. And once he'd done that, it was pretty simple to wire Balthamus's head into the holoprojector. And then, with a few clacks on the keypad, and a very satisfying bleep, a rainbow array of information unraveled in 3D before Lando's wide, blinking eyes.
Foe,
Lando muttered, sorting through what felt like an infinity of anatomical illustrations, mechanized device plans, and accounting logs.
Who would have thought an evil droid cult henchman's internal files could be so dull?
Finally, a star map flashed over the holoprojector. Then another, and another. Lando let out a chuckle.
Here we go.
The first two were your basic galactic layouts. The major systems, mid and outer rims, all that. It was the third that had Lando with his face scrunched up, eyes narrowed, lips pursed, when Han walked in and asked how it was going.
I think,
Lando said, then nothing.
That good, huh?
Han shook his head and headed back to the cockpit.
We're not far. Might want to get ready.
The door slid closed.
I think,
Lando said again. The holomap swirled with vast nebulae and swinging constellations. They all looked familiar, but Lando couldn't quite put his finger on where he'd seen them before.
What are you?
He whispered. No answer came. And whatever corner of the galaxy it was kept on with its slow rotation, sending a liquidy haze of colorful lights spinning across the dim room.
Where are you?
Lando stood, his cape swishing pleasantly against him as he rose, and scratched his goatee.
The power needed us to access Grimdark's data files.
Lando began a slow strut around the holo map, his boots announcing each clacking step in the quiet cabin.
The Grimdark data files tracked the location of the Phalanx, but the Phalanx wasn't there.
Which means the Phalanx either was sending out the incorrect data,
or had already left by the time the message got to where it was going.
The Imperial techs on Grimdark. Admiral Fasten's team. His steps came faster now. The star system spun in the opposite direction. Each star twinkled extravagantly as it spun round and round. The droids and acolytes on Grava had been so pleased with themselves. They'd been expecting the visit from Han and Lando. Which meant Gore expected them to go there, and probably followed the Vermilion to wherever it was going. The last known transmission point of the Phalanx. Lando jogged to the other side of the holomap and crouched by the keypad. With a few clacks, the galactic map Peekpa had showed them earlier blinked to life on top of the still-spinning one projected out of Balthamus's head. The whole thing became an unintelligible mess.
Right, Lando muttered, typing a few more directions into the keypad. Just show me.
The Phalanx transmission points lit up, pulsing bright red as the rest of the map from Grimdark faded into the background. Balthamus's map still spun, still looked vaguely familiar, but mostly nonsensical, like a song you could remember the melody to, but none of the words. "Griff," Lando muttered. And then, a crooked quadrangle of stars spun past its own smaller reflection. At least, that's what it looked like happened. Lando slammed the pause button on the keypad and jumped to his feet. He stepped forward, stuck his head all the way up into the overlapping holo maps, and squinted. "Yes," he said hoarsely. "Yes." The stars echoed one another. Balthamus's map was a detail. Or maybe... Lando stepped back, then to the side, squinting one eye, then the other. Maybe it was a series of details. He cocked his head, crouched back down to the keypad, and clacked in a few more directions, splicing off the echoing section where its edges seemed to dim slightly, and then laying it directly over the larger map. One of the phalanx's blinking red markers lay right in the middle of the sector.
"There you are," Lando yelled.
"There who is?"
Han said, walking in from the cockpit.
"Something," Lando said, squinting again as the next few moves he'd have to make to complete the puzzle began to take shape. "Something."
"Yeah, well, you should take a break and come look at this."
Han retreated back to the cockpit.
"Look at what?"
Lando said, following quickly behind. He slid into the co-pilot seat and gazed out at a scattered debris field.
"I don't see anything."
"Exactly," Han said. "This is the rendezvous point. They're gone."
Utapau, about 18 years ago.
"There has been another breach at the southern perimeter, Master,"
the droid said. Fison had been standing at the lip of the canyon, arms crossed, staring at the still dark sky as day broke slowly across the Utapauan Badlands. "Good," he said softly. 7 and 13 are in need of limbs."
"I don't think they're Amani,"
the droid said.
"I think they're other..."
Fison studied the droid for a moment, a simmer of unease roiling through his gut. This was Number One, whom Fison had come to consider his right hand, the first and most trusted of the original dozen. Greasto's arm, now grayish and with some mottled signs of decay, still hung from Number One's right shoulder. "Other..." Nearby Amani tribes had been hurling wave after wave of their best warriors at the canyon hideaway, with varying degrees of ferocity, ever since Fison and two of his droids had sneaked into one of their camps late one night and snatched up four of their young. Unlucky. It had been 2/3 of the chief's brood they'd taken and butchered for parts, and those toadstool-shaped reptilian savages suffered no insults to their great leader. They were all bloodlust and vengeance, even at the cost of an entire generation of their fighters. Worse, they'd proven somewhat worthy opponents, cleverer than their primitive appearance and pathetic croaking indicated. Gore had lost 2 of his 14 droids in the first run-in, although he'd wiped out the entire regiment of Amani and then the village they'd come from. That had only incensed the surrounding tribes more, but Gore had been ready for the second assault. He'd installed perimeter sensors. That fully supplied transport they'd crashed in had proved a near endless source of supplies, and laid several explosive traps that annihilated the first 8 rows of tribesmen. The droids made quick work of the rest, with minimal damage. There had been several skirmishes since then, and a few droids had been injured. But watching from a cliff edge during the most recent tit-for-tat, Gore had come to realize that there was a greater benefit to these little battles than he'd previously understood. They were practice. He and his droids were being prepared. He could feel it in his long, hollow bones. And the truth of it crystallized even more a moment later as a flash and bang erupted from the battle below.
His droids had backed the Amani warriors into a tight angle between two rock formations, and then simply detonated both of them, crushing the Amani in the landslide.
None of this has been an accident, Gore thought. Not my abduction. Not my triumph over my captors or the Utai. Not Christo's death or my survival. And now, as the unknown intruders advanced toward them across the plains, Fison calmed his own flash of anxiety by reminding himself that not a single moment since he'd been stolen from the safety of the demonstration chambers of the Prostine Brack had happened by mistake.
Prepare the counter-assault, Gore said. Whatever this is that's coming, today will be a very bad day for it indeed.
Shadows rumbled toward him through the dim morning. Transport vehicles, Gore realized as they approached. Not unlike the one he'd been reborn from the wreckage of. A slight grin quirked across his long face. How fitting. The four vehicles stopped in a cloud of dust in front of Gore. The first sun was rising slowly behind them, but it was what the plains people called a wet sun, diminished by distant nebulae. The day would be a gray one. Powans seemed to unfold themselves from inside the transports. They wore balaclavas and carried heavy weapons. Wandering Star.
Fison Gore,
the one in the middle said, with laughter in his voice. Fison bristled at the man's arrogance, said nothing.
I am Klee Pastera, head of the Fourth Directorate of the Wandering Star Syndicate.
He pulled down his balaclava to reveal the exact sneer Fison had imagined him to have.
You don't even want to put on some clothes to welcome your guests?
Fison looked down at his long, emaciated body, the ribs poking out through his pale gray skin, the stark countenance of discoloration the suns had ravaged him with. He wore a blood-stained rag around his waist, and nothing else. He hadn't been seen by another civilized creature in almost 2 years. Slowly, a grin spread across his face. Watching these self-assured criminals get crushed would be a delight indeed. To them, he was a castaway, nothing more. A wild man, lost in the wilderness. Probably stories had been made up about what had happened to him. For a flickering moment, Fison wondered where his parents were, how they had coped with his disappearance and probable death. What would they think of the desert pariah he had become? He shook his head. What did it matter?
Nothing to say,
Klee Pastera chided.
Very well. I will speak. I've heard stories about you, Fison Gore. Wild and impossible stories. I admit I did not expect to find you alive, let alone standing on 2 feet. You don't look well. Still, if you live, that means perhaps there is some truth to these wild tales of a brigand with murderous droids. Could it be?
Fison didn't move. Didn't flinch. He felt his heart rate start to gallop, though. Felt the flesh on his neck shudder over his rippling pulse.
I wonder,
Klee said, his smile widening. Then he nodded, and half a dozen of his gunners drew chain whips and advanced on Fison. Fison didn't budge, knowing what was coming, but somehow this all felt wrong, terribly wrong. Somehow, even in defeating these thugs, he would be playing into their plan. He was sure of it. He was revealing his hand. And that was all he had, really. With a flicker and whir, refurbished medical droids lurched out from underground bunkers on either side of Gore. They closed with the Wandering Star attackers, easily deflected their swinging chains, and then made quick work of them, slicing, stabbing, and finally beheading each with a kind of cruel precision no organic could display in the thick of so much brutality. Klee held his ground, but the other Powan gangsters stepped back, uneasy. It wasn't just that these droids had so easily massacred their gunners, Gore realized. It was that they each had organic limbs in place of one body part or another. It was a macabre sight, of course. Most of them were the gangly green and yellow arms of Amani tribesfolk, but one that Faizen had grown used to. Come to relish, in fact. It was grotesque, perhaps, but it was also genius. Why should organics be gifted with droid parts when they were injured, but not the other way around? Organics were always falling apart, their failing flesh suppurating and cluttering toward disintegration. Droids were forever. Anyway, it was also a simple question of practicality. Organics were a natural and seemingly unending resource of the Badlands. Droids were a finite one. Using a spare robotic limb for a droid amputee would have meant taking it from another droid. And taking anything from a droid was forbidden. It was a sin. Gore knew this in his core. He didn't have to read it in a manual or on some sacred tablet. It was simply a truth of the galaxy. The droid squadron turned to the Powan gangsters. There were fewer droids than Wandering Star, it was true. But these were just the front guard. More waited in reserve, of course, including Number One. And anyway, the droids were superior warriors. Of this, Gore had no doubt. They were advancing in slow, deliberate clumps toward the invading organics, when a terrible thundering rolled out from the distance. Out over the Badlands, an F-99 radon gunship rattled into view. It looked like a hovering tank. Faizen grimaced at it, understood immediately that this was why he'd been uneasy. It was the certainty that they'd somehow been outflanked before the battle had even begun. And of course, they had. The Wandering Star rarely let themselves be caught off guard. Certainly not in a fight they themselves were picking. He took a step backward toward the canyon. Another F-99 came into view behind the first one. Both roared toward them with astonishing speed. Within seconds, the whole world thrummed with their calamitous rage. "Kill!" Faizen howled. "Move in tight with them!" And his droid sprang to action, closing with the line of Wandering Star in seconds and unleashing brutal mayhem in their ranks. By the time Faizen realized Klee Pastero was gone, it was too late. The gunships hovered on either side of the unfolding massacre. Then they opened fire, laying down a blinding barrage of laser cannon blasts that shredded everyone on the tiny battlefield in front of the transports, droid and organic alike. And then, just like that, the pounding cannon stopped, and all that could be heard were Faizen Gore's howls of rage and sorrow. Klee Pastera was smiling down at him when he opened his eyes. The tall, muscular gangster showed no sign that his own gunners had just been shredded in front of his very eyes. He looked serene somehow. A man out for a stroll. "Didn't see that one coming, did ya?" Faizen frowned up at him. Four droids gone, completely ripped apart, obliterated. What had they thought of just before those cannons had let loose on them? Were those final moments tinged by regret? They put their bodies on the line for an organic, a frail, pathetic man. And sure, he'd repaired most of them. But what was that worth? What did it matter now?
"You have more of these monsters you've created," Klee said. It wasn't a question. Faizen closed his eyes. "You have more of these monsters. And you will tell me where they are, and how you made them."
"Never!"
Faizen croaked. But he knew deep down that he'd been defeated. For now.
"Let's not waste each other's time, Dr. Gore. We both know what will happen next, yes?" "No," Gore thought.
We both know how this little interlude will end. But no one knows what'll happen next. No one knows what I will unleash on this sinful, broken world.
My gunships will carpet bomb this entire sector. They will level it entirely. Not a snit mouse will be left unannihilated. Do you understand? Your monsters will be pulverized. They will cease to exist.
Fison felt a stream rising up inside him. Suppressed it. Not yet. Even he wasn't fully sure where all this would lead. But he understood he had been spared. And more than half his droids had been spared. And it wasn't an accident. None of it was an accident. And just like the droids, he had learned, every defeat was a victory if you survived and learned. He would never be out ruthless again. He would make this ridiculous pauper gangster's cutthroatery look like a quaint children's game.
They're in a bunker beneath us,
Fison said in a wrathful, choked whisper.
Good, Klee sneered. I knew you'd come around. And now,
he signaled someone off to the side and crouched down so his face was very, very close to Fison's.
Let's talk about what you're going to build for me.
Part 4. The Chevalier, now.
This is very bad,
Han said, as the debris field spun before them in that maddeningly slow dance of deep space.
Very,
Lando agreed. They both leaned forward, squinting at the emptiness where the Vermilion should have been.
See anything that might have been part of the ship out there?
Han shook his head.
Probably he
got on board somehow and then took it over.
And then got the info from Peak Pie and
took off to find the Phalanx.
Lando finished, closing his eyes.
All right,
Han said.
I'm always rushing off into things without thinking enough first. So let's recap what we know and...
You recap what you know,
Lando huffed, standing and swishing out of the room with that ridiculous cape of his flowing behind him.
I'm going back to see if I can figure out the missing piece in the equation from that droid's head.
Great,
Han called after him.
Teamwork!
I'm almost there, Lando yelled from the cabin. And anyway, what else are we gonna do?
The door slid shut.
What indeed,
Han muttered, sweeping the Chevalier into a glide directly above the debris field. Various chunks of space detritus floated in a narrow line stretching off into the infinite galactic Neverlands.
Gore has a device that can turn droids into homicidal maniacs.
Star Cruiser engine turrets, a huge rusted industrial fan, scattered rock formations, the power distribution trunk of a Corellian Corvette.
Gore wants access to the information we retrieve from Substation Grimdock. There's no way he can single-handedly take on a Wookiee, a New Republic agent, and a bad as a Gundark Twi'lek military strategist, right?
The charred skeleton of a giant conveyor belt system. More space rocks, a steering rudder, a gangplank.
The coordinates we came to were the last known point of transmission for the Phalanx. The Phalanx traveled through the galaxy for 10 years, while Gore rotted in an Imperial prison moon. What if...
Han said, eyeing the ongoing debris field.
What if...
He hit the thrusters, shoving the Chevalier into a rumbling dash that skirted the top edge of all that junk.
What if...
The comm system blurted out an incoming transmission alert, and Han slammed on the brakes.
Griff!
Lando yelled from the other room.
What's going on up there?
Something trying to contact us.
Han opened the channel.
Hello?
Lando walked in, rubbing his head.
Could have warned me.
Pre-pats, Kepa-chum-chum!
A high-pitched voice yelped in Ewokese.
Peepa!
Han and Lando yelled together. Han looked at Lando.
Any idea what she said?
No, but...
He pointed at the blinking light on the sensor screen.
I know,
Han said, gunning it.
I'm on it.
The escape pod would have been easy to miss amid all that debris. Peekpa had probably shut down the power to avoid detection while she waited for the Chevalier. Han grabbed it with the tractor beam, and then he and Lando walked to the airlock to greet Peekpa. The Ewok tumbled out of the pod, panting and whimpering, and handed Lando two data cards.
Are you hurt?
Han asked, checking her little furry body for blood. Peekpa shook her head, and then wrapped her stubby arms around Han's neck and squeezed.
I mean,
Han said.
I...
Then he just shook his head and squeezed her back, patting lightly.
Okay.
We love you, Taka,
a scratchy voice said. Han gently untangled himself from the tiny embrace and turned to see two figures smiling out of the holo projector.
We always will, no matter what happens.
This is an old recording,
Lando said. Han snapped his fingers and got up close to the holos.
That's what Taka was watching the day we took off from Chandrilla.
The two figures were middle-aged and dark-skinned. The man wore a tall, elegant hat, and the woman had her hair in gem-adorned braids that she'd wrapped into two graceful strands and twisted above her head.
We'll see you after the summit in Alderaan,
the woman said.
We think about you every day, and we know you'll do wonderful at the training camp.
Stay safe, Taka, the man said.
He sounded worried.
Please.
The woman wrapped her arms around him.
We'll see you soon.
And then the message cycled back to the beginning.
We love you, Taka.
Lando shut it off.
They're Alderaanian.
Han felt a familiar sadness open in him. It was the same one that rose whenever something happened to Leia that reminded her of watching her home planet explode into a million particles from the deck of the Death Star. She would perform and perform, smiling and pretending everything was okay. And only Han would know she was slowly falling to pieces inside. And then they'd finally make it home, and she'd collapse, stare at nothing for hours, and slowly, grudgingly, let Han comfort her and bring her tea. And then the tears would come, and Han would hold her as she heaved and released. And that's when, inside, he'd be breaking too, piece by piece, with no idea how to put himself back together, let alone his grieving wife. Han sighed.
We gotta...
I know, Lando said. Let's see what's on this other data stick.
Kasha's image flashed over the holotable, her dimly lit face creased with determination, and somewhere deeper, fear. Lando took a step back, as if he'd been struck.
Lando... Someone's trying to get on the ship. It must be Gore. Our controls are down, and Taka's trying to manually reboot the system. But it's been sliced somehow. We're putting Peekpa into the escape pod along with this holo, and, hopefully you'll figure out where... we...
Kasha looked around the dark area surrounding her, then yelled as a loud bang sounded, then the whine and moan of metal being wrenched apart and deformed. Kasha turned back to the holocam.
Lando, I know this isn't the time for this, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry I've been so... abrupt. I was protecting myself. I didn't see you as the settling type. I mean, you're not, to be fair. So I closed off. I just didn't know...
She shook her head, staring off into the darkness.
I didn't know which Lando would show up at any given moment, you know? The Lando that ran around the galaxy for decades, being reckless and never tied down, or the Lando that shared his heart with me when I held him in my arms. The Lando that was only out for himself, or the Lando that risked his life to take out the Death Star. Everything I knew about you told me to stay away, not get too attached, but everything I feel, whenever I'm with you screams the opposite. Yes, ever since Passanovo. And yes, on Bespin. Yes, on Chandrila. All along this journey, yes, yes, yes. And now, I don't even know if I'll get to see you again. And I admit I still wonder. I still don't know who you are. But I want to find out.
Lando stepped forward, his eyes bigger than Han had ever seen them, mouth open. He reached up, just as Kasha extended her slender fingers outward.
Masari,
she whispered. From somewhere behind her, Chewie could be heard roaring. Then blaster fire screamed out, and the feed cut.
No,
Lando whispered.
Chewie-san,
Peepa said, shaking her head.
Lando,
Han said,
get back to what you were working on. Peepa will help.
He caught the Ewok's shiny black eyes. She nodded once, and then leapt to work, pulling out the data card and bringing up Lando's galactic holomaps. Lando closed his eyes, seemed to delve deep in himself to find some hidden reservoir of strength. When he opened them, the fire was back. On it.
And I'll...
Han tilted his head, fast walking back toward the cockpit.
I'll see what else I can find in this highway of junk.
Not much, it turned out. Eyes still scanning the never-ending river of space garbage, Han sent a holocall out to Leia. It didn't go through. Idly, he punched the hail button again. It beeped twice, then nothing.
Damn it.
Was that a gun turret? Half of one, anyway. Sure looked like it. An idea nudged its way through the clutter of Han's mind. The laser-charred S-foil of an X-wing. A ramp of some kind. A turbine fan. What if... Leia's flickering image popped up on the small holoprojector beside the control panel. Han exhaled.
Han!
Her voice dissolved into a storm of static.
At all costs!
Leia?
And Taka! Can you hear...
Leia! No, I can't!
Han!
Han sighed and rubbed his eyes. This is ridiculous.
I know. Love...
Leia's voice said, suddenly clear.
But it's all we've got right now.
Han perked up.
Leia, listen to me! Gor has a device that will turn thousands of droids into killers. Do you hear me? I don't think it went past Chandrila, but still. Can you hear me? Make sure...
Static. Han punched the holoprojector, and Leia's shimmering image vanished completely. They were in some faraway armpit of the galaxy, parsecs from any system with any worthwhile comms. And for the first time, Han could remember, the hugeness of it all felt suffocating. A heavy blanket blotting out the world. Not the wide-open road it usually seemed like. Road. He glanced down at the trash highway beneath him. Took the Chevalier into a glide even closer to the floating mess. It did look like a road, didn't it? But where did it lead? If he had been trapped on the Vermilion with the comms dead and grid down, and that maniac closing in, he would have done just what they did. Sent someone out in an escape pod with a message, and then fought like hell. Barring that, he would have tried to leave something behind. To leave a trail to where he was so someone could get him. There was no way the Vermilion crew could have dumped all this behind. But hadn't Peekpa said the Phylanx was a collector of some kind? What if... Han gunned the engines again, blasting along the junk path. It twisted in an ever-shifting helix through space, winding suddenly off to the left, and then dropping off, picking back up again a little farther on.
What if...
Han said out loud. And then he pulled the Chevalier up and over the crest of a long stretch of gears and wheels.
We got it,
Lando said, running into the cockpit with Peepa close on his heels.
Whoa.
A field of slowly turning ice asteroids opened up before them, each one glinting dimly with the light of some faraway sun.
The Masulan remnants, Lando said. We've found them.
The Chevalier. Now.
What do you mean, we? Han demanded. I found it. And what are the Masulan remnants?
Lando rolled his eyes and slid into the co-pilot's seat.
Team effort, if we're being honest about this. But nice work, old buddy. The remnants are shards of the Ice Moon Masula, which shattered eons ago.
L3 and I visited here more than a decade ago, looking for this same maniac.
Oh, yes, Han said. That time you tried and failed to get your hands on the device that I got punched out for actually capturing.
If you'd been able to keep your grubby hands on it, Lando growled, none of us would be in this mess, though, would we?
Beside the point.
Is it?
Peekpa warned.
See? She agrees with me,
Han pointed out. Lando narrowed his eyes.
I'm tired of you.
Are you tired of me finding exactly what you just came running in here looking for?
Lando scowled, eyes scanning the field of floating ice.
I'm gonna ignore you for the sake of finding these folks and getting this handled.
When L3 and I came the last time, the remnants were in an entirely different sector of the galaxy. What I didn't realize is that somehow the remnants migrate around the galaxy to no pattern any astronomer has been able to determine. And Gore programmed the Phalanx to move within the shards of ice to keep it from being detected.
Peekpa added sagely. Han and Lando looked at each other, both hoping whatever she said wasn't too important.
Right, Lando said. He also had it send transmissions at regular intervals. But as we suspected, the transmissions were set to hold until the Phalanx had already cleared the area before sending. So only someone with the coordinates to match the transmissions would be able to decipher where exactly the Phalanx would be. Gore had the code, but not the transmission data.
Until he hijacked the Vermilion,
Han finished.
Right. But,
Lando nodded at the scattered debris that still floated around them amid the floating ice shards.
Something else is trying to leave a trail to the Phalanx,
Han said.
That's all I can figure, because it led us right to it. Or to here, anyway. We still don't know where the Phalanx is.
Or the Vermilion,
Lando pointed out.
No.
Han glanced out the cockpit window.
But whenever Gore shows up, he's probably gonna come shooting.
Lando punched up the front and rear shields, increased them to full power.
Thing is...
I know, Han said. We can't blow him out of the sky. We're gonna have to try to get aboard somehow, or...
Get to the Phalanx before he does?
Lando suggested.
And break it.
Don't know how well that'll go over for our folks still on board the Vermilion if Gore has nothing left to lose, though.
They jetted along among trashed ion engines, a tailpipe, more gun turrets, the Masulan remnants spinning their silent, luminous revolutions in space around them. The sensor stayed eerily quiet. Peekpa had pulled out her data pad and was tapping away furiously, muttering to herself.
Sabatki!
She chirped insistently.
Shakti! Batabatacho!
A small furry paw reached over Han and shoved the steering mechanism sharply to the side.
Easy!
Han snapped.
That's my job.
What does she see?
Lando said, glancing out at the remnants.
Where are they?
Shaktima!
Peekpa urged, waving at Han like the landing crew at a docking station.
Peekup!
That way, I guess,
Han said, banking off to the left.
But I got a bet.
The sensor erupted with a high-pitched beep and dueling frantic burps.
There!
Lando yelled. The Vermilion lurched out from behind a large ice chunk above them, laser fire blazing from its turrets.
Oh, no you don't.
Han muttered, shoving the engines into high gear and blasting forward as the trash around them disintegrated into smoke.
Good looking, Peekpa. That maneuver got us off to the side enough that Gore had to ignite his engines a few seconds before he could attack. Saved our skins!
They hurtled through the debris, Han dipping and spinning the craft to avoid the larger shards and smashing directly through the smaller ones. The Vermilion fell into a hard dive behind them, lighting up the remnants with another barrage of laser fire.
Hold on tight,
Han warned.
This ain't gonna be pretty.
Debris exploded around them. The Chevalier rumbled as a few shots lit up its tail end, and then Han gunned it, blowing past the smoking wreckages directly into a smoky cloud and out the other side as more fire rained down from the Vermilion.
Kinda wish Taka hadn't been so good at arming that thing in retrospect,
Han grumbled.
We need a plan, Lando said. We can't keep running like this.
Speak for yourself,
Han snorted, pulling them down below the lines of debris and into a more open area between ice asteroids.
I could do this all day.
Two proton torpedoes blitzed out of the Vermilion and flashed toward them.
Incoming!
Lando advised as the sensor screen lit up with warning messages.
I see him, I see him.
Han pulled into a tight upward swing, sliding between two charred transport frames. One of the torpedoes smashed into an ice asteroid, scattering it into an explosion of dust. The other was tight on their tail.
Like I said,
Lando growled.
Pigpa!
Han said, leveling them out suddenly and then breaking to the right.
Can you slice into the Vermilion? Is that how you found them before?
Pigpa nodded excitedly, but then waved to get Han to look at her.
What is it?
She extended her arms all the way to either side.
Pigpa, Chudoba.
The Ewok shook her head sadly. Then she brought her little furry paws closer together and nodded with enthusiasm.
Gargala, Shakti Bata!
Lando looked at Han.
Guess you gotta get us closer,
he winked.
Want me to drive?
Not a chance,
Han said.
But I do want you to suit up in case Pigpa's slice can't get through and you have a chance to make it on board.
Pigpa snorted something and shook her head, but kept typing away on her data pad.
Read my mind,
Lando said, already making his way out the door.
Stay ready,
Han said.
Clear skies.
The Chevalier, now. Han spun the Chevalier into a wide spiral, weaving in and out of the junk field. The torpedo smashed into a fluid converter off to the side, splattering the windscreen with smoke and debris.
Get ready, Pigpa, Han said. You're not going to have much time the way this guy's guns are blazing.
Pigpa said haughtily.
Fair enough.
What the Chevalier lacked in weaponry, it made up for in kick, Han had to admit. They sailed in a high arc above the Vermilion, easily evading Gore's splatter attack of ion fire, and looped around behind it. Before the Vermilion could spin to face them, Han had slid beneath it and then shot up again, only catching a scattering of shots across his wings. Pigpa was muttering to herself, chewing on something and clacking away in a fury.
You're hungry?
Han yelled, banking left to avoid a spinning ice shard and then pulling up behind it for cover as more fire burst past from the Vermilion. Pigpa muttered something rude, he was pretty sure of it. But then she yelled frantically, moving her hands closer and closer together in front of his face again.
All right,
Han said, zipping out from behind the asteroid and immediately getting smacked full on by a raging thunderblast of laser fire. The Chevalier shuddered and groaned.
But we can't take much more of this, so...
Pigpa's datapad shrieked excitedly, and so did Pigpa.
Oh?
The Ewok whacked Han's shoulder and opened and closed her paws in his face.
Ow!
What?
The ship rumbled again as more lasers battered them. Han turned back to the steering wheel and shoved the Chevalier out of the way as a torpedo slung past.
One of us is going to have to learn to speak the other's language, Pigpa, because...
Pigpa snorted, rolling her eyes. She slammed her paw on the comm button. the firing from the Vermilion stopped.
You hailed him?
Han gawked. Peekpa scooted down to the floor with her back to the console and started typing away on her datapad and crunching something. Fison Gore's flickering image appeared in front of Han. His already narrow face was framed by that dark,